This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock on Friday, the 12th of February 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM and through our internet live stream. The show will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. In today's show, we're talking with Jerome Jacob of Fruity, with Mo Ali of Aidworks, with Zoe Spriggins of Awesome Walls Climbing Centre. Before we turn to our guests, if you missed last week's programme, which featured Laura Bullock of Seven Hills Bakery, Sam Chapman of The Flow, and Anga Cara and Zach Ahmed of Learn Create Sell, you can still catch it on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. Go to Shows Business Live, find podcasts, and you'll find the show from the 5th of February. And of course, you can find a wealth of exciting, wonderful radio shows to listen to on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website, from rock to reggae, folk to UKG, and much, much more in between. Now, before we turn to our guests, some quick updates and business news. Female employees are going to have to wait another 2 years to find out if they're paid less than their male counterparts, as the government has now unveiled plans for the league table, which will rank large firms by gender pay gap. It was a move that was long resisted by many large business groups. Companies with more than 250 employees are going to have to disclose how much they're paying in salaries and in bonuses to their female and their male staff. There'll be about 8,000 firms on the league table. The government says they hope it will draw attention to the worst offenders in terms of a gender pay gap. It's going to be published from 2018. That gives firms time to address inequality before their data appears on the list. And bonuses are also going to be included in the figures to make sure a light is shone on pay disparity in city firms. They're suspected to be a particular problem in pay inequality there. The Equal Pay Act means it's illegal to pay different amounts to men and to women who are doing the same jobs. But estimates from the Office for National Statistics suggest that the pay gap currently stands at 19.2% for full and for part-time workers in the UK. Now, that would mean that a woman, on average, earns around 80 pence for every pound earned by a man. Now, it's understood that there are going to be a number of metrics that will be reported on when the data does become published, including mean calculations and median pay, as well as bonuses and earnings distributions across different levels of income and of seniority. Tech North has published their latest update, and it's well worth a look. You can find out more at Tech North's website. Find out about which tech sectors are particularly strong here in Sheffield and in Yorkshire. Take a look at that. And there are a couple of events coming up in Sheffield which you should go along to if you're working in social enterprise or business. Next week sees the return of the Social Enterprise Social. It's next Thursday, the 18th of February. Easy to find, free. Look up Social Enterprise Social to find out more. And on Thursday, the 25th of February, Rotherham Hospice are hosting a business breakfast networking event from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Outokumpu in Sheffield. Outokumpu Stainless Distribution is a world leader in stainless steel. And the event features a free behind-the-scenes tour of Outokumpu, plus a talk from Jay Bayani, who's a leading employment law solicitor. She's been on this programme a few times, and she'll be giving an update on the key changes that businesses and social enterprises, whether small or large, need to know. So don't miss that. You can find that on Eventbrite. Look up Outokumpu 25th of February. Of course, there's plenty more coming up as well. Next week, Magna are hosting a business event on the 18th. Again, look up Magna business event, free to go along to as a delegate. Find out more there. Now, remember, if you're starting or running your own business or your own social enterprise, or if you're an employer, we're always keen to hear from you. You can get in touch with this programme if you've got ideas for what we should be covering on air, or if you want to nominate someone as a guest, or even yourself as a guest. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200, find us at Sheffield Live on Twitter, you can find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter too. We're always keen to hear from our listeners with your suggestions, ideas, and even your nominations for who to get on the show. So let's turn now to our first guest of today. I'm really delighted to welcome Mo Alley, Programmes Director of Aidworks. Mo, good morning.
Morning, Jamie. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks very much for getting in touch with the programme, as we suggest that our listeners should do, and telling us about, well, first of all, about a couple of things that you've got coming up, and then we want to find out a little bit more about your organisation as well. Now, I noticed that you've got two really interesting events coming up here in Sheffield. One is called Being an Aid Worker. Mm-hmm. That's taking place on the 5th of March. And you have another event called Women in Aid on the 8th of March, mm-hmm. both taking place at the Circle in Sheffield. Mm-hmm. And first event, Being an Aid Worker. That blurb says, are you interested in a career in international development or planning to volunteer abroad? Or do you have staff members who want to improve their skills? So, Being an Aid Worker, the basic skills course, is going to take people through a fictional scenario based on real-life events from your 20 years of field experience. Now, this sounds absolutely fascinating for people wanting to volunteer or who want a career in international development. You talked about the course including a fictional scenario. So how does that work? What happens on the day?
Well, you literally, as you enter the course, your visa will be, your passport will be stamped, and you're entering the country, as it were. We try and make it as real life as possible, whilst based in a sort of classroom setting. So we take you through your first day, your first month, and your first 3 months of being in what we call the field, which you know, people call working in rural areas in overseas. And we'll just show you some of the experiences, run you through some scenarios, get you to think and use some of your own skills and think about what programmatic and personal skills you need to work in such a scenario.
So what kind of skills do people need to have? And how can they learn these skills?
That's a really good question, and I'd love it if you could come on the course and you can feel it yourself. A lot of it's about your own being pragmatic. To be honest, I'll always take someone with a good attitude over their experience to work with organisations I've worked with in the past. A lot of these skills can be picked up as you are experiencing in the UK. I've worked with police officers, social workers, medics, a good range of people backgrounds have come into aid work.
And this, of course, builds on your own expertise mm-hmm. and your own experience. Mm-hmm. And as we said, 20 plus years of experience combined here in your team. So tell us more about Aidworks, and for listeners who've not come across your organisation, why you founded it and what your intentions and objectives are.
Thanks, Jamie. We're probably not very well known. We only started 2 years ago. So we do two main things. We're based in Sheffield, so we support organisations working in Africa to deliver aid better and also train new and current aid workers. So part of these training courses that we run is part of our sort of training schemes. And we found over the last 20 years combined that we're not getting the right people with the right skills into the jobs, and part of this is because everything's based in London. So we purposely run these courses in Yorkshire, in Lancashire, with Manchester, but. The idea is to try and broaden people's horizons and also give access to information that and training that people normally not have.
So I can really see how this is incredibly valuable. First of all, not being based in London means that you're much more accessible to the rest of the UK, mm-hmm. the rest of the country. And secondly, it's building on your own experience. You've worked for the UN, you've worked for NGOs, fund managers, and so on. So tell us a little bit about your own experience. I mean, that sounds like you've worked all over the world, and that's really the case, isn't it?
Oh, well, thanks for that summary. Yes, I mean, mainly in East and West Africa, to be honest with you. A lot of it's about fragile states. A lot of it's based on what the UK taxpayer pays for overseas. So the UK government actually focuses on some of the most hardest reaches places, the Somalias, the South Sudans, the Ebola responses, and so on. So a lot of my work's been focused on emergency response, but also trying to hand over responsibility back to the local government and the local populations.
And as a career choice, this is something that lots of people will do as a volunteer, but also this is something that lots of people do as a career. It is a vocation. It is a calling, of course, in the same way as for some people being, say, a teacher is a calling or whatever. It's something that can take you all over the world, and it's something that's very, very challenging. But there is a career here for people with the appropriate skills and the appropriate attitude there.
You're absolutely right, Jamie. Some people do it as volunteer over a small period of time. Some people dedicate their career to it. You can spend over from 5 seconds to your lifetime supporting international development. But that's up to you. So other people will dip in and out of it. Medics, for example, often go and work for people like Médecins Sans Frontières for a few years and then come back and then go back to what they would normally do. So the options are open. There isn't a clear path. There isn't a clear like a civil servant that you'll follow a certain path and career choice. It's up to you what you want to do and how you want to sort of mould the help you want to give others or how you want to partake in it.
Yes, indeed. And so, as you mentioned, AidWorks itself has been established for a couple of years now, and your intentions are to make this more accessible to people by running your courses outside of London and to give people information as well as skills development and learning. Now, what's been the biggest challenge in getting the organisation itself established?
I think it's probably quite similar to other social enterprises. You go through moments of confidence to doubt. But I've been really lucky that I was part of the School for Social Entrepreneurs. I got a place on that school, which is, I think, the application process for this year is right now, and so I was able to meet other social enterprises, other startups, and know that actually I'm not the only one that suffers from doubts and roadblocks as you develop your own organisation.
Indeed, and the School for Social Entrepreneurs, that was their Yorkshire and Humber School, was
That's
it?
Correct. Yeah. Yes, yes.
I actually met with Sue Osborne, who runs a Yorkshire and Humber
Fantastic.
School, a couple of weeks ago at the Social Outcomes event at Voluntary Action Sheffield, which I was chairing. And Sue again has got in touch with this programme or got in touch with me as well as we met last week, suggesting that someone who's currently on the programme the School for Social Entrepreneurs programme comes on this show as a guest, and we'll be having Karen Newell, whose social enterprise is called Toy Like Me, on the show in a week or two as well. So again, listeners, that just gives you an aside. We do respond to your suggestions for people who should be on the show. But Mo, you said School for Social Entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So that was really useful, was it,
in terms of
helping you overcome sort of barriers, challenges, and understand what you needed to do. And as you mentioned, they're now recruiting for another intake as well.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And what other sources of advice and expertise are there? I mean, we mentioned things like the Social Enterprise Social and Sheffield Social Enterprise
That's
Network
correct.
Is now becoming a really... there's a lot of momentum now behind it, isn't there?
There is. I'll be at the event next week, so I'll see you there.
Marvellous. Good. So you've got another course coming up as well. We've talked about the first one on the 5th of March, but there's another one on the 8th of March about women in aid. Now, what's the rationale behind that course, specific issues being discussed there?
Thanks for picking up on that. It's an event rather than the course. So
right,
it's a,
sorry, yeah.
It's a, some presentations and a Q&A. It's open to the public and anyone who wants to come along, and it's a 1.5-hour evening event. Well, it's in line with International Women's Day that's that week and She Fest, which is across Sheffield. So we wanted to do something specifically on aid work. You'll hear from aid workers that are women and also specific challenges that women face. I mean, it will talk about some of the realities in aid work, some of the realities women face in particular, such as in South Sudan, a woman has more chance of dying in childbirth than finishing secondary education.
That's astonishing.
So just bringing some of these facts to life and showing how we would react and how aid work can support such astonishing figures.
Indeed. So now that that's a day of presentations, is it? Or
it's just
a session?
Evening. Just an evening.
Presentation.
Free coffee and tea as well.
And that's taking place at Voluntary Action Sheffield
that's
as
it,
well.
Yes, yeah.
So for people who want to find out more, either about that evening or about the training course, being an aid worker, basic skills on the 5th of March, best place to take a look is your website, of course.
That's correct. Yes.
So that's aidworks.org.uk.
That's correct, yes.
And there are details on there. Now, aside from these initiatives, what's coming up in 2016? What other plans do you have?
We've started a volunteer programme to try and get people more experience in aid work in Sheffield. So we've got two new volunteers starting. But we're also continuing with our overseas work as well, because it's important that we not only train but also do programmatic support overseas.
Yes.
So I'll be off to South Sudan probably in 2 weeks' time.
Right. Okay. Well, it would be great to get you back on the programme in a few weeks to hear about how everything's been going.
That'd be fantastic. Thank you.
In the meantime, Mo Ali, Aid Works, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thanks.
And of course, people can also find out more or engage with you through Twitter and LinkedIn. Do you want to just give out, well, the website address once again and also your Twitter address?
Yes, so it's aidworks.org.uk. So some of our experiences as a social enterprise are also there as well. And our Twitter handle's aid_works and Facebook's aidworks UK. So please follow us and you get a bit more of an insight to what we do and some of the things we're trying to promote.
Brilliant. Mo Ali, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for the time.
This is Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're on 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. We're going to play a track of music which has been chosen by our first studio guest today, Mo Ali. It's Ocean Colour Scene, the Riverboat Song.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. My name's Jamie Veitch, and we've just had a track of music by Ocean Colour Scene, which was chosen by our first guest of today, Mo Ali of Aidworks. If you've just tuned in and you've missed Mo Ali of Aidworks, a fantastic social enterprise, don't panic. You can catch the podcast of the show. It'll be up on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. Now, it's cold. It's very cold. What better to warm yourself up than a nice cup of hot tea? Now, whether that's caffeinated or whether it's something perhaps a little bit more relaxing and less prone to make you start talking really fast like this and get a bit jittery like I do after about 17 cups of coffee a day, a nice cup of fruit tea. But the problem with a nice cup of fruit tea is nice and fruit and tea. They haven't always gone very well together. They've been dry, they've been horrible. One man is on a mission to fix that. He reckons fruit tea is ripe for disruption and change, and he's out there and he's set up a business to do it. Jerome Jacob, good morning. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Jamie. What an intro. Wow.
Well,
that was powerful stuff.
You're famous for your intros. And in fact, here's a quick aside. I had to give a one-day workshop to a bunch of MBA students from South Korea fairly recently for the University of Sheffield. And part of that was talking about marketing and how social enterprises and small businesses market themselves. Now, you don't know this. One thing that I showed them in that workshop was your video of you and tea. They loved it. Honestly, they loved
brilliant.
It.
Brilliant.
So fruity. For those who are wondering, what on earth are they talking about? Tell us about fruity. Why did you come up with the idea for fruity, and what's the mission?
So it all started back in 2014. I went out for a cuppa and a catch up with my friend Rachel after work. I was working down in London in advertising. And basically, I was on a bit of a health kick. So I thought, oh, I'll try something new. I'll have a bursting berry fruit tea, see if it's any good, sort of thing. And my friend Rachel had an English breakfast cup of tea, just straight up. And I was like, Rachel, you eat 8 portions of fruit a day. Rachel was famous in the office for eating 8 portions of fruit a day. I was like, Rachel, why don't you have a fruit tea? You obviously love fruit. When you get this chance to enjoy it some more, you've obviously, you know, you've gone back to your British roots, sort of thing, and you've stuck with your breakfast tea. And she said, well, go on, give it a sip. And I was like, smells fruity. She's like, but it doesn't taste fruity. And all of a sudden, all the memories of being in my aunt's kitchen as a nipper and like smelling these amazing fruitiness and wanting some and then getting it and having this kind of wishy-washy dishwater tart taste suddenly like flooded back to me. And I had one of those moments where I was like, I knew I wanted to start a business. And I was like, this is the thing, like, I've got to focus on this and solve this. And so went on a rampage around the supermarkets finding out why this was the case. And it's basically because fruit tea doesn't actually have any fruit in it, or if it does, very little. And it's air-dried fruit, so create an alternative, basically.
So the alternative that you set out to create, how did you do it?
It's basically, it's gone through several rounds, but I've now created this wonderful new type of drink. I actually call it real fruit infusions, and it's the alternative to fruit tea. And it's a special type of dried powder, which where you put a spoon, you just put a spoonful in your cup, you give it, add the hot water or cold water, and you give it a stir. You see all the fruity magic happening, and then basically the lovely powder like basically starts falling to the bottom, and you get all the fruitiness starts oozing out of the fruits.
And you went through several iterations then. You say to get to the stage where you're getting the taste that you want, and this process must have been difficult. And it must have been difficult because presumably other people would have tried to do something before. Or, you know, you can't have been the only person who noticed that existing fruit teas weren't really, you know, living up to the description.
Yeah, quite right. I think lots of people have tried it. Well, not lots of people. I think it's one of those things slightly, actually, where people are kind of like, as soon as you tell them you've had that idea and you've executed it, they're like, oh, I wish I'd thought of that. Like, you're absolutely right. And it's the common problem of when I sell it in as, you know, it tastes as fruity as it smells, it's something that I'm finding strikes home very quickly with people, and they're looking for something, they've been looking for that solution. And, you know, it's just good because fruit tea boxes are flying down the rubbish tip, and you're seeing all this out-of-this-world fruit infusions flying in onto the shelves around Sheffield as we speak.
Flying as we speak, indeed. So which of the particular infusions are most popular?
So we've got 3 flavours to start off with, yeah. And we've got more in the pipeline. The first 3 flavours are raspberries and strawberries, which are most popular. I think it's kind of a good intro, and that basically like revitalises and refreshes you. Then we've got blackcurrants, blackberries and blueberries, which is like a kind of detoxy one. It's like full of antioxidants. And then we've got sour cherries and cranberries, which is like for soothing and relaxing you, like melatonin, things like that. So, yeah, it's really good.
And where do you get the fruit?
At the moment, we source our fruit from Europe, just because of the seasons, basically. And then in the future, obviously hoping to get British fruit. We're very proud to actually make the end product in England. And we're proud to be a Sheffield company. So in the end, that's what I'm aiming for, really.
Yes. So you're a Sheffield company. And how did you set up the business? How did you constitute the business? What's the kind of structure in terms of the business?
I'm actually a graduate of the University of Sheffield. Graduated in 2012. And as I say, moved to London for a couple of years. Realised that it's kind of like it wasn't the thing for me. I'd been doing some favours for an old lecturer of mine, a chap called Gary Wood, at the university, like doing like graduate profiles, things like that, because it was a good job in London and stuff. And then I told him I'd had this idea, and he'd actually switched roles to working with the Enterprise Centre. And he was like, well, Jerome, did you know that actually you can get like a 3-year office, you can get like an office space, we'll put you on like a entrepreneur programme, like training you, stuff like that. And connect you with like lots of different things around the city. And I was like, well, that's just the kind of foundation I needed. So moved back up up to Sheffield and set everything up. And yeah, the rest has been history since, really.
Indeed. And the business itself, is it constituted as a limited company?
Yeah, limited company.
And so where else did you get support from? Obviously the university and the University of Sheffield Enterprise.
Yeah, so I'd say there's been three key institutions in Sheffield. The University of Sheffield, obviously with the things I just mentioned, but I also won their competition for Best Startup 2015, sponsored by Santander last year, which is kind of how I kick-started it, production and everything. The Wasco Brown Foundation, who basically are run by, it's run by... Jim up there on Atcliffe.
Yeah, Jim Lawson's been on this programme a couple of times.
So, yeah, a chap who's very focused on developing sport and business in Sheffield and charities.
Yeah, and he used to run the Entrepreneurs Network here in the city as well, so well connected.
And also Andy Hanselman is another chap who has also consulting, and they put me in touch with Emma Killey from Delish Alchemy, who's one of my mentors. So.
Great. So this has been helpful in terms of overcoming obstacles or challenges in particular and keeping on the path to success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great stuff. Now, with the business, with Fruity, people can buy Fruity from the website, but obviously you're getting stocked in cafes and in shops as well. Not just in Sheffield.
No, it's been expanding this week. We've been having calls. We're now stocking down in Nottinghamshire, and we've got a store in Lincoln, Bells in Lincoln now. But yeah, it's one of these things now where it's kind of the momentum's hitting it, and people are just going crazy. And I'm kind of like, I've got a team of freelancers and things, and we're just trying our best to keep up with all the online orders and trying to get it so all the cafes are, you know, like... well stocked, and the shops that are reordering. That's the nicest thing, actually, is having reorders and stuff. So, yeah.
So it must be really satisfying if you've got in there in a shop. They might think, yeah, well, we'll give it a go. But then they come back and say, yeah, we want to reorder some of this.
Yeah, and I think you probably get in... if you're a cafe owner, they probably realise this. You get quite a lot of people pitching things at you, often just reiterations of things that have been done before. So when they get something a bit innovative, they do, you know, I think they'll give it a go sort of thing. And if anyone who's listening wants to give it a go, then hit us up. And then when they actually get the success with it that they're hoping for, I think there's kind of a, you know, you kind of have to earn it as a supplier, that kind of trust and everything like that. And that's something I'm really going to work on, is just helping them sell as much as they can, because that will benefit everyone in the long run. So,
indeed. And so at the moment you're employing freelancers, you're employing people on a freelance basis to assist in the business. So the next step in terms of scale is... you know, premises, taking on staff. Now that's quite a big step, and it's a big commitment to make. How are your plans going in terms of scaling up? Where do you think you'll be by the end of this year? Where do you see yourself? Where do you see the business in 5 years?
We're currently going through a funding round at the moment, it's kind of investment and speaking with the banks, things like that. So over the next 5 years, we're looking, I've got like a few conversations at the moment with like larger retailers, and also like one of the coffee chains. So trying to secure deals like that, which are going to be, you know, give me that kind of break and give it a big splash. I'm going to try and make lots of noise with PR and, try and create some, you know, a fun brand that people can resonate with, and it, you know, they're like, oh, that's the guys that reinvented fruit tea, you know, it was rubbish until they came along. And we have a longer social term issue, which I should mention, which is regenerating British wildflower meadows. So at the moment, we're very much focused on creating a sustainable business that can grow and support that. So you mentioned 5 years, and within 5 years, I'd like to have made a kind of a hit on that, you know, and start regenerating those British wildflower meadows.
So how would you do that? Through contribution of profits or through projects or both?
A combination of profits and time. Yeah. So we put aside a portion of our revenue, and we also are looking at, you know, as I build the team, everyone's going to have allocated amount of time to do work on certain projects. There's certain groups in Sheffield, like conservation groups and things, that we want to get involved with, and basically go from there, really.
Yeah, great. So it's on a plan for success, a plan for growth and a plan for development. And of course, like lots of entrepreneurs, lots of business people on this programme, you make it sound in some ways, quite easy. Well, you make it sound like you've
there's
got it all
under control. There's the tip of that iceberg.
Exactly. And that's the thing, isn't it? Because because like any startup and any business, there are numerous challenges that you've had to overcome. And when you go from being successful at the scale you are to then scaling up the business in a bigger way, if you, for instance, wanted to get into supermarkets or simply to sell much, much more fruit tea worldwide and to more cafes and more shops, there's a scaling issue. There's the issue of staff, there's the issue of premises. And as you say, funding is necessary for that and a funding round. Now, we spoke a few months ago, I think, with Savvy Spreads, a Sheffield-based business that that started in a kitchen at the founder's home, and then they took on premises at Regather Works in Sharrow, and then they needed to scale, and they did that through crowdfunding and through offering equity in the business, equity crowdfunding, and they raised £87,000, I think. They went for 50, raised £87,000 because people wanted to invest in the business. So obviously they diluted their equity. Is that something you'd consider, or is the funding that you would prefer loan finance? What kind of funding is...
No, crowdfunding is certainly one of the options that ticks our thing. In terms of scaling, I've from the outset, I've said I don't want to be a kitchen manufacturer. I've never produced fruit in the kitchen. So from the outset, I've actually created a BRC accredited supply chain.
Yeah.
So if someone just snaps their fingers and says, Jerome, I need a million tons of your amazing real fruit infusions, I can just get the wheels into motion and pull the strings. And, you know, it's all that's I've kind of set out from the start doing that. And it's what took quite a while to get all set up and make the right relationships with the right suppliers in the right locations and things. So that's how I'll be scaling it. And then with crowdfunding, and whether it's VC or whether it's, you know, they say friends, family, fools, they say banks, you know, it's at the moment, I think it's one of those things where you kind of cast your net and you see what the haul brings in and what would be best. Certainly looking at a few different options at the moment.
Great stuff. And I think actually it's worth unpacking that issue in terms of supply chain, because as you say, getting that right from the outset has been worth doing. Obviously, it's been time consuming in terms of the setup process, but you now have an accredited supply chain, which enables you to scale as well. Presumably also enables you to manage risk in your supply chain as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where, you know, when you get big contract come through. So this last week, I can happily say we're now be supplying the University of Sheffield, who have 22 outlets. We're starting in the View and Velocity. Then we're going to see it roll out over the next couple of weeks and start stocking it, serving it. And working with bigger companies like that, I can tell you already the forms and stuff they require will hopefully be a lot easier when you've got the right boxes already ticked in anticipation for that.
So your advice for someone who's starting a business in the area of food and drink is, if the intention in the medium term and long term is to be at scale, to get that supply chain right, sorted right from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's partly as well about saying like what you're setting out to achieve. So I've met a couple of companies who make versions of other food products that already exist, and they're very happy as a sort of cottage industry. It's a very strong part of the British economy in its own right. And that's their, you know, they just want to fulfill their life themselves and do it. And then if you want to disrupt an industry in its own right and you want to do something big, then I would always say have that vision that guides you and focus on that, and just keep focused, and all the decisions you make along the way should be related to getting to where you're aiming to go.
Great stuff. Well, this is Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're talking with Jerome Jacob, founder of Fruity. And Jerome, people listening who are really interested in Fruity need to know where to find you. We're going to carry on talking in a moment, but it's worth pointing out the spelling of Fruity.
It is, yeah. And I was thinking about this today on the radio. So for the radio, because Fruity is spelt, ladies and gentlemen, pens and paper at the ready, please. It's PHROOTI. And that's because if you write Fruity in your phone, it actually tries to auto-correct it to fruit. And we're all about fruit. We're Fruity, not fruit tea.
Superb. Well, we're going to take a break for a quick track of music, and this is a track of music chosen by our guest Jerome. It's Lou Reed, it's a Perfect Day, and we'll play it right now.
Beautiful song.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And that was a track of music, Perfect Day, by, of course, Lou Reed, which is chosen by our studio guest, Jerome Jacob of Fruity. Jerome, welcome back.
Good to still be here.
Thanks for choosing the music. So why did you choose that?
Well, it's kind of a good story in its own sense, in that basically a couple of weeks ago, my dad came up to Sheffield. So my family live in Southampton, and it's obviously a good 4-hour drive. I often drive down and see them all, but they rarely kind of come up back up north because it's quite a trip for them to come back in a day or two. And my dad came up and I picked him up from the station. We went for coffee, we went for lunch, we went round the Millennium Gallery, we went to the Winter Gardens, we had a look round the Crucible, stuff like that. And we had a nice whiskey to finish off. Dropped him. We had some dinner down in town. This is all about within 7 or 8 hours. And I dropped him back off at the station. And I just thought to myself, do you know what? That's as simple and as perfect as it can get. You just have, you know, a nice day with a loved one. And it's just one of those, you know, like really golden moment. And I texted my dad and I said, thanks for a perfect day. And he just sent back that that link. And it just, so I listened to that song straight after that. And I was like, ah. Nice one, Dad. And he's currently in America listening to this. He's gone over there for a couple of months. Yeah, it's really for my dad, that one.
Fantastic. Well, lovely story, and not a dry eye in sight after. But it is a lovely story, of course, and a perfect day because of spending time with your dad. And obviously, Sheffield is full of perfect days, as we all know, those of us who live here and love it.
Sheffield, I love you. I really, really love you. It's a great place, Jamie. It really is.
Right. I'm going to take a clip of that from the podcast of this program. We'll take a clip of that and we'll
put it in a
jingle. It in a jingle on Sheffield Live. You are now going to be infamous.
There for the next 20 years.
but seriously, lots of people come to Sheffield to set up businesses or return to the city to work here after being at university here. It's got a massive retention rate for graduates, the city itself. You're someone who's lived all over the country as well. You've worked in London. Now, I worked in London for 7 years after coming to university in Sheffield.
Then yeah.
Went to London for 7 years and then came back, set up a business here. You're similar. You've worked all over. You've lived in London. You've come to Sheffield and you've made it home. Why is Sheffield a great place to live? Why is it such a great place to start a business?
Well, let's put it this way. I've lived in, as you say, like cities all over the country growing up. Leeds, Oxford, Leicester, Southampton, London, Sheffield, all up and down the middle, actually. And for me, Sheffield has absolutely everything. It's got the clean air. It's got the greenery. It's got the arts. It's got the sport. It's got the community feel. It's big. It's big enough to make an impact and somewhere from which to make an impact, yet small enough to still feel like home when you know, you're driving back up the parkway or the A61, depending which direction you're coming in. And I just find a kind of accord to them in Sheffield. I mean, the perfect example of Sheffield, I think, is in Wicker Camp, which is a Thai boxing gym, which I joined within the last year, really, and been going there quite regularly. And they basically have this true... They set up in the 70s, and it's run by this guy, Mick Mullaney, and proper sense of community, and it's in an old, it's where all the old steelworks and things were. So it's all about, they've kind of regenerated this area in that, you know, this particular building, and created a whole community. They call it the Wicker Camp family. We never give in. That's the kind of motto. And for me, that sort of spirit is what you get in Sheffield. You know, it's the togetherness and the willingness to help each other. You've got it right here. You know, we've crossed paths several times, and we're always mentioning other people in Sheffield and stuff. And I think you can go to other cities like London, and it's like, I absolutely love London in it for its own right, and visited there last week and go backwards and forwards. But the thing I like about Sheffield is it's not just about individuals; it's about kind of team all helping each other and coming together and benefiting one another.
Indeed, and that makes it a lovely place to live, and as you say, a lovely place to work and to run a business, to run a social enterprise as well. Great stuff. Now, in terms of what you do when you're not pushing fruity all over the world now. So you mentioned the Wicker and you mentioned joining the gym there So what else?
Well, we do this is Wicker Camp Thai Boxing, which is Muay Thai, which is that's the key one over winter. But I'm also a keen road cyclist. You've got the Peak District on the back doorstep. Into photography, have you got anywhere more photogenic than Sheffield? Hard to find that combination. I mean, you've got your Park Hill Flats, and then you've got your Peak District, and you've got all these amazing buildings which have that different. They've got their different periods all coming together. So, yeah, really, photography, road cycling, and Thai boxing are my.
So, have you tackled the Froggatt Hill climb on the road bike? I know it's somewhat notorious as a challenge that road cyclists like to test themselves on?
Yeah, it's certainly one of many. Obviously, I know you do mountain biking. I can assure you, Jamie, just switch that for a road bike and you'll find it a lot easier. It's lighter and, it's a much better setup. It's one of the ones that on Strava we basically... She's dying. you're right. Basically, it's one of the ones that we all try and race each other up. We actually have the Kerbar next to it, the Kerbar Gap.
Kerbar Gap, yeah.
Yeah, and the university partake in something called the Bucks National Road Race. The Bucks National Road Race, where all the universities race up that one, and that one's the one I want to see you go up on your mountain bike.
I think we're making Sangeeta laugh in horror of the thought of...
are you still all right? We need you.
Sangeeta's joining us in the studio, as ever, as our sound engineer, and I think it's a thought of me as a middle-aged man in Lycra, which is horrifying. It's horrifying to me, to be quite honest. So, Jerome Jacob, Fruity... A success story so far and a winner last year at the Enterprise Challenge at the university. In fact, I went to that dinner. I saw your acceptance speech and prize from Santander. You were overcome with emotion.
Yes, Jamie, I dropped the trophy. I did, yeah. That's probably one for the book, I think.
Well, it made it memorable, didn't it?
Yeah, so there was actually a video on the Fruity Facebook, PHROTI, guys, which basically I got up on stage to accept the award. I was kind of very excited. I get quite excited. And came up and they gave me a certificate in a frame, and then they gave me like a... another thing, and then like the trophy, which glass trophy, and you're trying to shake hands at the same time. So I managed to get through the shaking hands bit, and then I came to like they wanted you to say thank you sort of thing to the audience, and you know, I thank my mum and dad and all of those people, and my os and Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet.
Of course.
And they basically had this little lectern there, and I went to put the certificate on it for a moment. That was fine. And then I was like, well, I need to free my hands up because I'm quite an expressive speaker with my hands. And I put my, just without thinking, just put my glass trophy on the stand. And, it didn't stay there very long at all. So all of a sudden, the room went from this raucous affair of everyone laughing and having fun to just the absolute smash of this glass trophy all over the stage. Fortunately, I kind of just composed myself as it happened and just said, oh, my days.
Well, it made for a memorable evening.
I said on the day the business would last longer than that trophy, so that will still prove to be the case.
Indeed. Well, Jerome, thanks ever so much for joining us on the programme today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And, of course, people can find out more on the Fruity website, and you're on Twitter as well, and it's worth mentioning the spelling again with a PH, then an R, then a OOTI, Fruity. Do you want to give out the website address?
Yeah, it's www.phrooti.co.uk. And if you haven't got a pen and paper handy, if you Google Fruity, as in the F-R-U-I-T-Y, Fruity, not fruit tea, we come up second top. So if you get really stuck. And we're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Hook us up and get buying some Fruity. Buying and trying is the best way. because you'll keep me supplying.
Well, unforgettable interview. Jerome Jacob, thanks ever so much for joining us on Business Live today. So you've been listening to Business Live here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. My name's Jamie Veitch. On the show today, we've heard from Jerome Jacob of Fruity. We've also heard from Mo Alley of Aidworks. And I did promise an interview with Zoe Spriggins of Awesome Wars, which I have corrupted on the CD. So I'm really sorry, Zoe. We're going to play your interview next Friday, and the interview is talking about a fantastic forthcoming lecture which takes place on the 24th of February. So still timely if I play it next week. But the lecture that Awesome Wars are hosting is really, really interesting. It's about a team of paraclimbers who successfully summited the Eiger. So they're running that lecture on the 24th of February. You can book tickets. All the proceeds are going to a good cause. And book your ticket now because they're going to run out. Now, also a couple of other events that are coming up here in Sheffield worth going along to are the Magna Business event on the 18th next week, plus Business Breakfast. Rotherham Hospice are running on the 25th of February at Outokumpu. Look that up. Tora Global Leader in Steel. If you search for that on Eventbrite, you'll find it. Plus the Social Enterprise Social next Thursday, the 18th, 5 p.m. Look up Social Enterprise Social, February 18th. You'll find that on Eventbrite too. Now, this programme will be back next Friday. So on air, we'll have an interview with Zoe Spriggins of Awesome Wars Sheffield. And we'll also have, live in the studio, Hendrika Stevens of the Sheffield Antiques Quarter and Karen Newell of social enterprise Toy Like Me. So please tune in then, 9 a.m. next Friday. But don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. That's on from 10 a.m. all the way through to noon. We'll play out now with part of The War on Drugs, Lost in the Dream. Thanks for listening.